At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and today on Talk is Jericho, this is huge for me. Winnipeg's legendary rock music guru, a walking, talking human encyclopedia of popular music and one of my childhood inspirations, Howard Manshine is here. He called himself a rockologist, and wait till you hear this guy's voice. When I was growing up in Winnipeg, anything that Howard Manshine said to me was gospel. From all the people that he interviewed to all the bands that he told me to check out, the rockologist, Howard Manshine. I used to call myself a rockologist after him. Everyone calls him H, and wait to hear his stories. He's interviewed everybody, including Sir Paul McCartney, Guns N' Roses when they were just starting out, Burton Cummings in the Guess Who, and Howard had his favorite bass player from his favorite band of all time, John Entwistle of The Who, hung out at his house. Plus, he was very influential in the Canadian scene. Many of the bands should have made it bigger in the States, but didn't, like the Tragically Hip, Streetheart, Harlequin, the list goes on and on. We'll talk about the way the music business has changed and how it's affected radio and a DJ's ability to break bands. Howard Manshine is here. You may never have heard of him, but trust me, he is a trip and a true rockologist, just like me. One of the reasons why I got into rock and roll and wanted to be playing in a band was because of Howard Manshine. And that's why Fozzy started. And Fozzy's adapted to all the changes that Howard talks about, streaming downloads versus just radio play. But it's been huge for us with the Judas album and the Judas single. The rate has been unbelievable. Top 10 for 9 weeks. 100,000 singles sold. 10 million albums streamed. And, of course, over 12 million views for the YouTube video for Judas. And we've just announced the Fozzy Judas Rising 2018 tour. Get a couple tickets and put them in somebody's stocking. You still got time. We kick things off in the States in New Orleans on February 28th. Then we go all throughout everywhere. California, New York, Chicago, Detroit, Phoenix, Tucson, El Paso, Portland, Seattle, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Philadelphia. You name it, we're going there. Check out all of the dates at FozzyRock.com. We're taking out Through Fire, Santa Cruz, Dark Sky Choir, over 30 dates, East Coast, West Coast, all across the center, Texas, Houston, Dallas, Lubbock, everywhere in between, FozzyRock.com, all the cities, dates, venues, and ticket information. And, of course, we're doing our famous Fozzy VIP meet and greet, so get on that before they sell out. No one does a VIP pre-show like Fozzy. We do a mini concert before the show, take requests, meet and greet, signings, hang out with you, talk to you, whatever you want to do. It's one of the best in music, so get your tickets to the Fozzy VIP experience and check out all dates at FozzyRock.com. Once again, a great stocking stuffer for your loved one that loves the Fozz here at Christmas time. And we're not forgetting about all you European Fozzy fans as well. We'll be back in Europe starting January 28th in Paris, France with Steel Panther, Gay Paris. We're going to Spain. We'll be in Switzerland, Luxembourg, all across Germany, France. We're going all across Belgium as well. Everywhere. We're hitting Europe very hardcore with Steel Panther. Starting January 28th, once again, all tickets and VIPs available at FozzyRock.com. We're going to rock and roll. We're going to keep the rock going today with legendary rockologist, Canadian DJ, Winnipeg DJ, Winnipeg local legend, Howard Manshine. He's coming up.
Talk is Jericho.
Okay, so I grew up in Winnipeg, and I'm here now, and one of the cornerstones of living in Winnipeg is listening to the radio and hearing the voice of Howard Manshine. And the thing I love is we got a chance to do an interview for your show the other day, and I was like, it really was, it was like a fanboy moment.
Oh, God bless you. Yeah, as much as you do, you know, and I've done a lot of cool stuff, but to get a chance to talk to Howard Manshine, it takes you back to like 1981, the musicologist Howard Manshine, the guru of Winnipeg radio. And it was a cool experience.
God bless you. I've said this before, and I'll say it again and again and again. Chris, anytime anybody goes on the worldwide map and the whomever says from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, whether it be you, Burton Cummings, you name it, it's that Winnipeg moment.
Are you from Winnipeg?
Born and bred.
Born and bred. So you understand, because that's the thing. Like I find, and I talked about this yesterday. I did a documentary. They're doing a Randy Bachman documentary.
Oh, they are?
They are. So whoever they may be.
Yes.
So I did an interview for yesterday. And I said, it's a little bit, Winnipeg's a little bit of a weird city in that the people in charge don't really give huge credit to the people from Winnipeg that go out into the world and make their mark. I don't know what it is, reasons why, whatever. Same reason why Burton for years had a problem with Winnipeg, because they would never acknowledge his existence, according to him. Do you find that you're always flying the flag for Winnipeg?
There was a time in the 80s, and the detractors might say I had a fear factor, but I had some offers in Vancouver and Toronto. My heart and soul were in Winnipeg. My heart and soul lives here. I love everything about this town, brackets, minus 30 below. But I love everything. Turn around, look outside, and if that doesn't take your breath away.
Yeah.
And think about this. If I was to tell you the July and August, the shows that we had in this town, A-plus shows, we could have been in any city in North America.
Winnipeg is a great rock and roll town.
The best.
Always has, since I grew up here and everything. Great.
The best. And the talent and the tunes. Because somebody did not succeed south of the border, does that diminish their scar quality? Not for me. They were Canadian gods. It wasn't, luck wasn't on their side. It wasn't meant to be. Harlequin should have been superstars. Kenny was Streetheart should have been superstars.
I was telling a couple of my friends, because there's this golden era of Canadian rock and roll from the late 70s to early 80s, where you had Harlequin, Streetheart, Loverboy, Aldo Nova, Kim Mitchell. That's just off the top of my head. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. And a lot of those bands were never huge on the other side of the border. I don't know why that is. But in Canada, that was a great time for rock and roll all across the
board. Let me take you back. That there's something in this country called CanCon, where you're required to play a Canadian song. Rules and regulations. There are Canadian songs that are being played that could stand up side by side, production-wise, musicianship-wise, with anything out of America. It did not diminish the sound of the station. And those acts that you mentioned, all heavyweights, it wasn't meant to be, whether the record company wasn't supportive, whether they didn't have big league management. Harlequin, thinking of you.
Unbelievable.
And you know the people, Todd Kearns, and Brent have a band that they do Canadian covers. If you were to hear Thinking of You cranked up loud, you would get, honest to goodness, shivers. It's that good.
Yes.
That says something about the writing quality of those tunes.
So let me ask you this, Howard. You've been in the business for how many
ever.
Years? Forever. Since the 1800s.
Yes.
Since before.
And I look good for this. Being that.
But you talk about a band. Okay, so let's say like Loverboy, for example, does make it in the States. Streetheart, Harlequin, Trooper, arguably just as good as Loverboy in a lot of different ways. Same song quality, so many great. Like Streetheart probably has the legitimately 10 bona fide hits in Canada that nobody in the States knows. So why would Loverboy get to that next level and not a band like Streetheart or Harlequin?
For starters, everybody needs L-U-C-K, but Loverboy had a heavyweight in, I was going to say his name, I'm drawing a blank, Bruce Allen in Vancouver.
He was the manager.
Yeah, Bruce Allen is coming off of success at the time with Backman Turner. Bryan Adams is starting to happen. When you have some success, you have clout. With clout, you can push buttons with execs at record companies. So Harlequin sells music and records in Canada. They're starting to have a cachet here. They have a deal in the States. And asterisk, Harlequin's records were produced by Jack Douglas, who did Cheap Trick, Aerosmith, and
Double Fantasy, right?
Double Fantasy.
John Lennon.
9 million copies later. So what happens? I don't know if Harlequin had... And it's how you push buttons with these executives. We're in a room right now, which could be in New York City. It could be the executive office of, at the time, Columbia Records. So you're the manager of Harlequin, and you're just another band that wants airplay. What buttons do you push? Mm. How do you get the team? So you might get one guy in small town America on your side and another guy in small town, but how do you get the team committed to what you do? And it's how you push those buttons. Mm-hmm. And you could say kill them with kindness, but when you act like, if I can say this, a prick, and when you're a nice guy. And there's an art. And some guys, and Bruce Allen was the kind of guy, he'd come in there screaming like, you didn't get this play, what the f-? We need this play. Ah, yes, Bruce, we'll get on. Other people intimidated. And there wasn't, it's not like way back when that managers went to school. Some of them had the smarts, some of them had a commerce degree, and other guys used car salesmen. And that reflected in the way they sold their band.
It really is the team behind you in a lot of ways, right?
A commitment from everybody.
So you're talking about a team and longevity and all this stuff, and you've been on this scene here in Winnipeg. When did you start?
78.
Okay. So you are, in a lot of ways, the last of your kind.
Sadly.
A rock and roll DJ who can make a difference. Who when you started the 70s and 80s and playing songs, you could help a band or break a band.
Correct.
Just by your influence.
Enthusiasm, your passion. Right. There was a time and a place, and I'll take you back to 78, 79. I went to see Streetheart at on Pembina Highway in Winnipeg, a place called the Norlander. I was blown away. To me, they were the Rolling Stones. They were the Sex Pistols. They were an absolutely incredible band. I had the, for lack of a better word, the power of the music, to go on the air as soon as the record came out and play the record and talk about it and play the record. So there were people that, and when I was a kid, I was one of those people. Oh, the announcer said this. It must be good. The announcer said he ate at the Boston Pizza in St. James. It must be a good place. The power that you had over people. But at the same time, the power that, to whatever degree I had, I needed to back it up with great product. And Street Art had that great product. Mm-hmm. And to be on the air when there was an incredible scene, not only just Street Art, Harlequin, and Chris Burt-Gaffney had a, and you remember this, the Pumps, and then he had Orphan. He wrote some great songs. So to be able to go on the air and be so passionate, back it up. Mm-hmm. But back it up with legitimate, great music.
Right, because you heard that, like, there's the famous story of how Rush was struggling, or Rush was just doing what they're doing, and a DJ in Cleveland started playing Working Man just randomly, and then that would spread, and that's how Rush kind of started to break. Did that happen here too? Like, if you played like a Street Heart, would somebody in Brandon or Regina or whatever listen and go, wow, I'm going to play Street Heart too, and would sort of go across the entire country?
Well, it's funny how it worked. So we would play Street Heart in Winnipeg, and then the rest of the team would get on board and play Street Heart.
Right.
So Street Heart would go out and do tour dates in Western Canada. So announcer in, fill in the blank, would, hey, Winnipeg's playing this, we'll play the music. Mm-hmm. So they got a cachet going on. But what happens, so you play the music, you still have to drive the folks to the show. But if you get an announcer in those markets as is passionate, he would drive the people. And then the proof is in the pudding. Mm. The product is that good. The product is that good. When they saw, whoa, Kenny Shields, God rest his soul, doing his magic. He was an incredible, incredible front man.
So when you were growing up, you obviously were a big music fan.
Still, yeah.
What were your bands that you dug?
I was a Guess Who guy. When I was a kid, Burton was beyond incredible. He was my Mick Jagger. He was the greatest front man that you can imagine. He didn't sit behind the piano. He was Little Richard.
Right.
He was Jerry Lee Lewis. He rocked like you wouldn't believe, and he had no fear. He had no fear of falling. He did whatever the term rock and roll star encapsulated, he was that guy. He rocked.
So guess who? Did you go see shows?
I saw. When I was a kid, the drinking age was under 21. I'd sneak in. And it was the greatest high sneaking in. And I would sneak into some places, and some of these acts had bodyguards and bouncers. What the hell are you doing here? I'm here for the music. Please don't. I'm here for the music. I want to listen to the music.
Yeah, did you see any big acts that were bands coming through to the old arena?
I saw when I was a kid the Rolling Stones.
What year?
66.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw
They came to Winnipeg in 66.
66. In 68, when I was a young kid, the Animals were on a bill with the Guess Who, the Animals with Eric Burton, and they absolutely blew me away. Just little guy, but powerful, powerful vocal styles. He didn't move on stage. He let his voice do the magic. Yeah.
So like when I was a kid, it was the same thing. You'd go to see these shows. I would always wait around, try and find them in the hotels, knock on the door. I knocked on Adrian Smith's door from Iron Maiden once at the Westin downtown, you know, following James Hetfield down the hallway. Did you ever do stuff like that? Like how
I
far
was I was that kid that did that. And I did it with a group of people, and we were just whatever the word fan meant. And as you know, back in the day, there was not Facebook, and there was not.
Right.
We were the guys, we'd have vinyl.
So we'll go back to Paul McCartney. I get a phone call from Toronto from the record company. And
what year is this?
94.
Okay.
So I get a phone call from the head of national promo for Capitol Records. Hi, Howard, I'm so-and-so. Paul McCartney will do one interview in Winnipeg. Why should you be the guy? I says, well, now that I've pitched myself, so I sell myself, et cetera, et cetera. So the guy says to me, and I don't know if he's playing with me, he says, well, the next guy's going to give me the same story. I says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to talk to people that I respect. And at the end of the day, McCartney will shake my hand and he'll say, thank you for those great questions. Really? I says, yes, really. So it's 24 hours, they don't hear from him. It's 48 hours, they don't hear from him. 72 hours, he says, Howard, here's what we're doing for you. We're going to send you to the sound check. I could go to the sound check. So I'm thinking, over the years, some of the guys will have a sound check. They'll have the band without the lead guy.
Right. So you, yeah.
McCartney does sound checks. McCartney does sound checks, so I'm at the sound check. And let me just take it aside. To do the interview, I invited a junior, a tech from the station. The tech is bringing the equipment, so my job is to be focused on Paul McCartney, not to be concerned about levels, not to be concerned about any distraction. Just do your Paul McCartney. So anyway, to make a long story short, the junior says to me, I'm a big Beatle fan. I says, so am I, not knowing words. So he says to me, do you think I can bring some vinyl and get a few things signed? I says, I can't answer that, but I'm going to bring some things, and after the interview, we'll play it by ear. He says, that's cool. So 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there's a sound check. And I don't know, it's after about five songs. I don't know what button went on in me. I jumped up and I started air guitaring. McCartney's on stage, gives me a peace sign. Paul McCartney gave me a peace sign. Whoa! Anyway, so he does about 40 minutes, which was beautiful. And then somebody with McCartney's management says, Paul needs a half an hour. Do whatever you have to do. McCartney has a trailer on site. So there's me, there's somebody from McCartney's management, and there's the tech. So we're sitting in there, the size of this room, and I'm just, as I haven't been over it 20 times, I'm still going over my notes. Like they're not going to improve any. So McCartney comes in. Hey, laddie, you were the guy that jumped up. Oh, nice to meet you. Paul McCartney said, nice to meet you. And then he says my name. Paul McCartney said my name. I was blown away. So I said, Paul, some of these questions you probably heard before, and I hope some of these questions you've never heard before. And I said, I spent a lot of time. He said, I'll help you out. And it's just like, that really meant something. So I'm going over the question, and I have the notes here, and I didn't need to look at them because I memorized them. Like, I'm asking that. And he's given like he's never heard the question before, even if it's been 15, 20 times. And talk about 1958 in England when the folks are coming over and they're bringing records from America. Talk about, and he's telling me, and he's just like, it's first time, and he's talking to me about the bad songs that he had written, etc., etc. I'm saying, man, it's like I'm in his living room. During the interview, there's a knock at the door. It's the late Linda McCartney. She comes in, she brings tea. Would you like to meet my missus? You're the damn right, I'd like to meet your missus. Can I have a hug with your missus? Anyway, so we do 40 minutes, and
wow,
even if he had heard these questions before, he was the British gentleman to make it sound like the first time. And perhaps maybe one or two were. So the interview ends, and sheepishly I says, Paul, can I get a few things signed? Sure, whatever you need. So I have this sign and that sign. I says, Paul, I have a sister in Vancouver that's a big fan. Rolls his eyes. I says, no, honest to God, can you put to Pam? Anyway, so then I says, I'm here with the tech at the station. I don't know what he brought. I just met the guy like a week ago. Like when you work, it's a summer relief guy, you don't know that. Mm-hmm. So that he has some music. So he brings out a record. And McCartney's looking at it, and I'm looking at it. And McCartney looks at me. He says, you know what that is? I says, Paul, I do know what that is. And I look at the guy. He brought some bootlegs. He brought some bootlegs. So Paul says to me, what's going on? I says, Paul, I'm going to be very, very honest with you. I could lecture him right now, or you could lecture him, because I'm embarrassed. I truly, truly, truly am embarrassed. And I can't even imagine how you feel. And the guy, I says, Paul, if you can meet him halfway and if we can move those bootlegs aside and if he has any paper, if he wants something signed. Anyway, so Paul's the complete gentleman. So everything finishes. I said to the guy, he's my life. What the? Were you doing this? Why should he care? He's a rich guy.
Oh, God.
Bootleg, you do not derive any money from. Again, Howard, why should he care? So I'm like beating my head against, you don't get it? This is not his property. He didn't see a cent. Anyway, I'm losing that. And I'm trying to keep my composure. I says, hey, you know what? Maybe one day you'll get it. It's called property. It's not his property. Anyway, so we walk out of there, and I'm not going to get mad, but I couldn't believe that how Paul McCartney took the high road. He took the high road, and he could have said, out. Mm-hmm. Just get out. Anyway, so one of those days that stayed.
Do you notice, and I've noticed this from being around, that the big name guys are always, not always, but for the most part, the nicest and humble and great and fun. It's always the middle level guys that have a little bit of the attitude, the asshole attitude.
Funny, that is so true. And the middle guys have a heavy. And the heavy is the jerk. But sometimes when you meet the middle level guys and you meet them, hi, it's nice to meet you. I was trying to get in here. Your guy wouldn't let me in. Your guy was acting like this. Your guy was. I've learned over the years, a lot of people are just like you and me.
Oh, absolutely.
And for years, Burton was a jerk. You'd have the Burton Cummings, you'd have the good Burton, the bad Burton. I think he's finally getting it. Mm-hmm. I think he's finally getting it. You know what? The gods have been good to me. I've been doing this for 50 years. I've been making a great living at something. The odd guy doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Just doesn't get it. Hey.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho inviting you to the first ever Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Picture this, rock and roll, wrestling, comedy, live podcasting, all on the open ocean from October 27th to the 31st, 2018, from Miami to Nassau. I'm bringing Hall of Fame wrestlers, some of the greatest rock and roll bands on the planet, and putting the first wrestling ring on a cruise ship ever. Don't be a stupid idiot. Make the list. Check us out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com.
This is Talk is Jericho.
So Howard, how have you been able to kind of morph and move with the times to be here almost 40 years later? Because DJs come and go so quickly.
I hope I've created a brand that has integrity. I hope that I take a moment out anytime I'm at Guns N' Roses and somebody says, can I have a photo? I take a moment out and I give them all the time and I give them all my energy because I was that fan and I know what it's like to treat them the way that you want to be treated. And at the end of the day, keep reading, keep growing, and keep learning, and keep asking those questions that... just not to get stale, not to get stale. And I hope that I can do this and go out on my own terms, because at the end of the day, and you'll get this, it's nourishment for our souls. Mm-hmm. It's nourishment for our souls that I'm a lucky guy. I just met Chris Jericho. I just met fill in the blanks. And so,
right.
Yeah.
But you, it's funny because I want to ask you how rock radio has changed. But I remember specifically way back, one of my favorite heavy metal bands was Raven.
Yeah.
And you had John Gallagher from Raven
good
on the
memory,
show.
Good memory.
And I'm like, why? Like, and no, this is not, Raven is not a radio band, or not even really known, but Howard Manshine, here's John Gallagher from Raven. Like, you would go deep and bring these bands on. So like you said, other people would go, well, Howard's talking to Raven, maybe I should check them out.
There was a time and place in radio when programmers had guts. Programmers today, if my boss was in here, they play it safe. They have a fear of, well, I don't want to be the guy that gave somebody the green light.
Right.
You know what? You might be introducing some new listeners to the station, and if they like that fill in the blank with the interview, whomever you spoke to, maybe they'll stick around and listen to other things. I was fortunate to have a metal show, and having a metal show, I had a green light. Mm-hmm. And the green light said, you hustle, you find these people, get them on the air. We had, not me, but it was a team, we had Guns N' Roses 3 weeks before the record came out. Anyway, those days are gone.
Because it's very much regimented now.
It is so, when I walk into work tomorrow, you know what I have in front of me?
Every song that you have to play for the day.
Yeah. So you can say, why do you do that? At the end of the day, I'm still doing it. Mm-hmm. And when I get home, I play whatever I want to play. And believe it or not, some of the songs that I have on that playlist, I still love. And for some people, it's the first time they're hearing that song. And I better sell it to them. I better make sure that I'm so passionate about that song that they're going to get it. And they're going to enjoy it.
So you mentioned the Guns N' Roses show.
Yes.
Did you know that so they played August 24th, 2017, and exactly 30 years prior
to
the day.
Open for the Cult. Yeah, I love bits like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what's in numbers, but I love bits like that.
I told Duff that, Duff told Slash, Slash told Axl. So even the guys.
Fantastic!
Even the guys in the band
thought
it was pretty cool.
Excellent.
You know,
people excellent.
About, so when you spoke to Guns N' Roses 3 weeks before the record came out.
Yeah, this is 30 years ago.
Who was it?
I spoke with Axl.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke with Slash, and subsequently we have a mutual friend, somebody by the name of Brent Fitz, that has worked with Slash, and I had mentioned that to him, that I had a break-in in my house in the 90s, and I had lost a lot of personal things, and one of them was, it would have been cool to have Throwback Thursdays, because it was a Thursday with Guns N' Roses, it would have been, to have gone back to the day with that interview, and they were, like everybody, they were green,
mm-hmm.
But they were enthusiastic.
When you see a band like GNR, do you know, like, these are your instincts as a musicologist, as a guy in the business? Do you see a band like that and go, these guys, if they get the LUCK, which you said earlier, could be huge?
I don't know how the paradigm is today. I hear from people that say to me all the time, is rock dead? I don't think rock's dead. I think a great band, and let me emphasize, cream doesn't always rise to the top. You need various other factors, but I have to believe somebody that good you have to make it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to make it. You're that good. The debut sold 15 million copies. Right. Why? Yeah. Because the tunes still sound incredible today. They're timeless.
Who are some of your other favorite interviews that you've had?
One of my favorite interviews, and I hope you know the name, he had a song called You're the Cat. It was Al Stewart.
You're the Cat,
yeah. Yeah. Al Stewart came to Winnipeg and was playing a club to, I think it was 150 people. But you know what he told me? He told me about his travels, and he told me about life. And we didn't just speak about music. I love that. Yeah. I spoke to Bob Marley. I didn't understand a word he said. We were in a room.
Hey, man, can I have another spliff?
I says, Bob, whatever you need. Don't let me stop you.
Bob, can I ask you a question?
Anyway, there's been some great... I'm trying to think... I have a giant place in my heart for Ray McGuire from Trooper. Mm. He's always there for me. I have a big place in my heart for Mike Reno. Mike Reno... give me 5 minutes. I'm there for you. Mm-hmm. Mike Reno of Loverboy.
Loverboy, yeah.
I'm trying to think. There's some guys. There's the odd douchebag that I've spoken to 25 times. But the only time that he's nice to me, he has a new record out. Yes. Yeah. It's for the most part, the Canadian guys are fantastic. Mm-hmm. There is something to be said about what's in our DNA, mm-hmm, and the water in this country. Mm-hmm. They're, like, for the most part, they're a pleasure.
Did you interview guys from Rush at all ever?
No.
Never?
No.
Wow.
Never. And I... See,
Rush never played Winnipeg in the 80s. They never came through
they
town.
They didn't come till about four or five years ago.
Which is so strange.
Supposedly, and this becomes a tale, that somebody was in the audience and threw a beer bottle. So you have a pretty good arm. You're in the audience. You think you could throw a beer bottle all the way to the stage? Anyway, it sounded good at the time. There was a band... I'm drawing a blank. Coney Hatch. And there was a guy named Andy Curry.
Yeah.
Coney Hatch. He'd come to town, we'd hang, and we developed a friendship. Andy works for Rush. We speak once every 3 weeks. Everything Rush. And he says to me, Howard, we become friends after Rush is no longer. You know what? I wish there was a Rush band. You could talk to him. I said, I still like to talk to him. There's still Rush. I respect him to the nth degree.
Maybe the biggest Canadian band outside of Canada.
Are we talking influence, sales numbers, or just respect?
I would say all three.
I would say Rush, because you can go to any country in the world where they do not speak, or English isn't their first language, and you play a Rush song, and they're like, yeah, and their eyes, mm-hmm, their eyes are dancing. And with the plethora of movies today that are 80s themed, there's Rush songs.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe Bryan Adams.
Bryan Adams.
Bigger Than Rush, Worldwide.
Well, the song that... Everything, what's that song again?
Everything I Do.
Yeah, that song, like... every country in the world that has...
Broke it right through.
Yeah, has a girl crying, and yes. Yeah. Give credit where it's deserved. And great rock songs.
Sure.
And a great, great, great rock band. I wish to this day, and I'm sure in my hometown... bias, that in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the guests who were there. Because if I was to compile a list of the greatest singles, they have to be in the top 10. A band with the greatest singles, whether you liked them or whether you didn't, the greatest singles. And then some people could say, just for American Woman, they should be in there.
The guest who's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? That's crazy.
And Joan Jett is.
Then I can dig Joan, but there's 100 others who are like...
Yeah.
So the guests who, I believe, in like 71 or something were like the biggest band.
70. They were bigger than the Beatles.
Right.
Yeah.
How could that not be in there? That's insane.
Because those in America... I looked down on Canadian acts. It wasn't until a few years ago that Rush finally went in.
That's
there.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sadly.
That's a good point.
Sadly.
Let me ask you this, talking about great Canadian bands. Is the biggest band in Canada besides Rush is probably The Tragically Hip.
Yeah.
But incredible. Never translated to the States. Now, for people that don't know The Tragically Hip, The Tragically Hip is the Rolling Stones of Canada.
Amen.
Completely huge, huge, huge act. Hundreds of hits, sell out arenas, then go across the border and play some dumpy little club.
Various answers, guessing only. They didn't have a lead guitarist that jumped right out at you like a Joe Perry.
Mm-hmm.
They had a singer who was somewhat quirky. That shouldn't play into it. His lyrics were Canadian.
Too Canadian, maybe?
Too Canadian, Anna. This means nothing. They didn't move to L.A. or New York. They stayed in Kingston in southern Ontario, Canada. That shouldn't play into it. But when you hear their songs, it had a Canadian, but... you go to Buffalo, and I know the folks will say, well, how many folks from Ontario went to Buffalo? There's still a lot of people from Buffalo in the audience that are high-fiving and jumping it. Tragically Hip should have been superstars, but I hate to think a singer with a quirky voice, I hate to think not having a great lead guitar player. Their rhythm section is incredible, and they're on the money. They're so tight. They're amazing musicians.
I was just thinking, I get an argument with my friend all the time about, like, every band... has the lead singer, like not every band, but the lead singer, the matinee idol, like Bono or Michael Stipe, good-looking,
yeah.
Rebellion. Gord was not that guy.
No, he was the CBC announcer, or the CBC listener.
Right.
Yeah, he was too, if this is the word, erudite for the rock and roll audience. Mm. He was a gentleman that wrote lyrics that could be played on the CBC. And if you were listening to Winnipeg radio, now more than ever, I think five radio stations in Winnipeg, more than ever, play the Tragically Hip. Five radio stations?
Probably multiple times a day.
And if you put on the Weather Channel, they play the Tragically Hip. It's become, for lack of a better appropriation, mainstream.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think? Gord obviously gets diagnosed with, I believe,
it killed
brain cancer.
It killed.
But then goes on tour.
Where do you find the strength? Where do you think about it? How do you find the strength to go on stage when you're not at 100%?
Mm-hmm.
Every day we're not on our game. Sometimes we have to suck it up. How about somebody that has an illness? Granted, there was a teleprompter on stage. He still had to read the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
He still had to deliver.
Deliver them, yeah.
I saw him a year ago in Winnipeg, and he was nearly the Gord of old. Mm. But there's a magic that was a part of the show. And if you didn't have a tear in your eye, and if you weren't doing this, you didn't have a heartbeat.
Yeah, because I think that final show broadcast on CBC did, like, I'm not going to say what the number was, but I think there's 30 million people in Canada and like 10 million people watching.
Yeah, everybody at least for some segment of it. And there's a documentary that is screened at the Toronto Film Festival, I think, in next week or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. About the final tour?
Yeah.
Gotcha. So what do you think about, like, because it's hard for a rock and roll band today, because obviously record sales are done. It's all streaming, and you basically put out a record as a souvenir for your fans when you go on tour. What do you feel about the music business these days in comparison to, you know, the 70s and 80s?
I hope that you understand what I'm trying to say. The Donald Trumps of the world aren't in the music business like they used to be. I hope the music business is inviting people with business degrees, people with a commerce degree. If you have a degree, you have a game plan. If you have a game plan, you have a better way of connecting. There's a lot of people that were in the music business that were fans, that were, again, used car salesmen, but you need the smarts.
Mm.
You want a band is a business. And for a business to be successful, you need a game plan. And you need to execute that game plan. I'd love to see more bands working with somebody that, A, has music in their heart, but has a business degree.
Hmm, interesting. Is there some bands in Canada or the States now that you really are into?
There's a lot of bands that I that I absolutely love, and I don't want to say some bands' names I want to say that the music today, if you look hard enough, the Canadian bands is good as any time. Any time before. Do you know the name of the Headstones?
Of course. I love the Headstones.
There's a movie out right now, Wind River. It's a Hollywood blockbuster. I haven't seen one ad that mentions that Hugh Dillon's in the movie. Hugh Dillon is in there for about 20 minutes. He owns the screen. In 1979, I'm a kid, and I see Bon Scott. Blew me away. He was absolutely incredible.
In Winnipeg?
Yeah. AC/DC opened up for Aerosmith.
Wow.
Anyway, I never thought that I would see somebody that good till in 1993 I saw Hugh Dillon. He blew me away. He is so charismatic. He is, with the late Bon Scott, the best frontman that I have ever the pleasure of seeing. They're
Headstones are another very underrated band. If you're listening, go on iTunes and check out Teeth and Tissue, A Picture of Health. We had a debate with the guys in Avenged Sevenfold of, is there such thing as a perfect album? And the definition of that is every song has to be A minus or better.
Correct.
Every song. And I listened to Pictures of Health the other day. I'm like, this could be a perfect album. There's not one.
I'm going to have to use that quote.
It's great. Yeah, you know, fantastic. You can do it with anybody.
Thank you.
Because we go through the first Boston album. I'm like, we go through track by track. And Hitchin' a Ride, B plus song.
This is fantastic.
It's a great. And I've taken this to all my friends, and everyone's fantastic. This one's A plus. But you have to. Do you like? I was talking about synchronicity with my friends.
That's a perfect record.
Okay.
Perfect. That's A to A plus. Yes.
Mother?
Yes.
A song, Mother?
To me, in a certain mood.
Okay.
In a certain mood. Everything that defined the summer of 1983 for me. That album was that. And yes. I came to Winnipeg that summer when they had the number one record. And the Thompson Twins on that bill, that was heaven.
Howard, that was my first concert.
That was to start off your first concert with the greatest. And how great were the Police?
Amazing.
Three guys.
And here's the cool thing about the internet is I Googled it and found the date, the set list.
August.
You can find that online. Yeah. Everything is there. You know, and that I like, you know, I like that that they came to Winnipeg. Yeah. Winnipeg always had, that's why like we're talking about Rush not coming here. They were the one band that did come, but everyone came to Winnipeg. There's always every band.
Online the other day, and I saw that Guns N' Roses will be going to Cincinnati on this tour. What's my point? The first time since 1991. Cincinnati's an A city. Mm-hmm. The first time. So from the top of your head. From the top of your head, there's no right or wrong answer, Chris. Right. An alien comes down from whatever planet. An alien says to you, hi, you know what? On my planet, we play rock music. You play it on your planet. What's the best rock album to say to the alien? See, you can, one album. Yeah. I'm going back home. What album can I take?
First one pops to my mind, but if I had to make the list of my favorite
albums. No right or wrong answer.
Kiss Alive.
Fantastic.
Here you go.
Yeah, fantastic.
You know, Abbey Road.
Yeah.
You know, White Album. There you go.
How about Appetite?
Master of Puppets. Appetite.
Yeah.
Power Slave, Iron Maiden. Yeah. Those are the albums for me. And not even Back in Black, High Voltage. You know, there's your AC/DC record, right? So you talk about Bon Scott. But first of all, before I start, what would be yours that you'd give the aliens?
My favorite band is The Who.
Wow, yeah.
And who's next? For me, if there was a meter in my car, my home, or wherever I resided over the last, the meter would be Bubba O'Reilly. Just Bubba O'Reilly.
Like most times played, you mean?
Yeah. It would be unbelievable. So I'm meeting somebody and I said, this is a bad joke. I says, my favorite band's The Who. And the guy goes, yeah, that's pretty cool. This guy's Ukrainian. I said, they wrote a song about your grandmother. They did? What are you talking about? Yeah, Bubba O'Reilly. Guy looked at me like,
there's a thing that I'm Ukrainian. Too, so Baba means
Baba O'Reilly.
I always wonder, what is Baba O'Reilly? What is that? Is it an Irish Ukrainian grandma?
Spiritual guy.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to the guys in the room?
I want to tell you a wonderful story. So there's a band called Scrublo Kane. Called Scrubble Kane, Paul Dean's band before he's in the Street Heart, before he gets into Loverboy.
Okay.
So Winnipeg was their base. They were looked after by the Guess Who Management Company. Anyway, to make a long story short, there was a guy named Henry Small. I'm a little young, but I get to know Henry Small when he's working with Burton Cummings in 1978, one of the backup singers. Then he has a project called Small Wonder. Anyway, we've done interviews. This is the 80s. We've done interviews over the years, and he was really charismatic guy. He's about 5 foot, so chick magnet. So he's a nice guy to hang around. So the Who is no longer in existence. Jefferson and McPhillips, there's a club. And he's playing there, and he says to me, Howard, you got to come down. And this is my hood. Come down to the sound check. I want you, because he knows that I love the Who, meet John Entwistle. So I meet John Entwistle. I says, I live 5 minutes from here. Why don't you guys come into my house? So John Entwistle's coming to John Entwistle. So in my basement, I'm that nerd. So I have the Who. And it's written by, I don't want to say his name because it's not nice. And it says, hope I die before I get old. And this guy's a really big guy in music that wrote the book. So I says to Mr. Entwistle, can you sign? This is the biggest piece of shit that I have ever throws it on the ground. I says, John, I just asked you for an autograph. I'm sorry, John. Anyway, I went to the show that night, and it was special to me to see somebody that in a club.
Yeah. You know what's funny about that is that just speaking from my point of view, knowing when you're on the road, in getting invited to somebody's house, most of the time I probably wouldn't go. So it's actually pretty cool that he came to your house. And John Entwistle, the best rock and roll death ever.
Oh.
Dies in a hotel room.
Yeah.
Literally with hookers and blow.
Yeah. How do you go out? You go out.
When you're with the Who,
yeah.
What other way is there to go? It's better than getting hit by a bus.
Oh, God. So anyway, on my wall, say this is my basement.
Right.
I have painted album covers, and they're framed, and they mean something to me. Like
somebody painted them.
Yeah, and then I'd have them framed.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'd sit down sometimes, and I'd have my listening downstairs, and then this is the days of vinyl, and the side would end, and I just stare at a disc, and I whatever meditate or what have you. So there's a picture of the Who's Tommy. It's a double record. It's really long. He says to me, "Did you just put that on the wall?" I says, John, it's been on the wall since I got it. I told you I love the Who. John, I love the Who. What aren't you getting? Anyway.
He thought you put it up just because you
always come
out of your house, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to just go back quickly and talk about Bon Scott, who to me is the best singer of all time in purveying the lyrics that he's singing. You believe.
He lived that lifestyle. Yes. He lived it. It's
when he says, like, there's a wet spot in your chair, is it Coca-Cola? Like, that, from Little Lover. Like, I can just, he's saying it to her so, like, squealer, like, so lascivious.
He lived that lifestyle. And Rosie, he did the dirty with Rosie.
Hold on,
and,
Rosie.
Yeah, and Rosie was a big mama. Like, Rosie wasn't this, like, oh, that's beautiful. Hollywood girl. Rosie was a big mama.
Right.
Anyway, there's a song called Sin City. Mm-hmm. And you know the song. Mm-hmm. You talk to Joe Perry, he will say that's the best Aerosmith song going. That's not an AC. He'd say that's the best Aerosmith because he says they went to school on AC/DC.
Mm.
They grew up on AC/DC. There's the sleazy Stones in Aerosmith, but so much of Aerosmith has that AC/DC.
Right, that swagger.
That swagger that everybody borrows from everybody else. But
So why were you saying that Bon Scott, besides Hugh Dillon, is the best front man you ever saw? What did he do that night?
He captivated me. He owned the stage. He ran this way, he ran that way. He took the mic and he swung it all of Roger Daltrey. He jumped on stage, he jumped off the stage. There was no perimeter. And if the perimeter was the stage, he went beyond the perimeter. Hmm. He went beyond the perimeter. Rock and roll is danger. He's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
He was so dangerous. Don't take my word for it. See a DVD. See a YouTube. The best frontman that I had ever seen, because he lived that lifestyle and it was so real. And it was just a part of his soul, mm-hmm. a part of his soul. And then you watch the Young Brothers. The Young Brothers. And how good
was Malcolm.
Great. How good was Malcolm?
What a great point. And that's something that, unless you're a rock and roll fan, everyone just would not even think about Malcolm.
Well, they think of Angus.
Yes.
And nothing wrong with that. No. I love Angus, too.
But Malcolm is the restraint engine
that moves, that pushes.
Yes, and I say this all the time, that AC/DC is the greatest live rock and roll band of all time.
Amen.
And also the hardest band to play in. People go, oh, yeah, you know, like Geddy Lee, I'm not going to say he couldn't do it, wouldn't have a hard time playing in Rush or playing in AC/DC. Neil Peart would have a hard time playing in AC/DC because it is so locked in and it is meat and potatoes and there's no frills and there's no bullshit. But damn, those guys are locked in as a machine.
At the end of the day, no BS. No BS. They mean meat and potatoes, rock and roll, and they deliver such a... Highway to Hell has to be the Bible for anybody that wants to be in a band. This project is the embodiment of what rock and roll is. That is the standard. It always will be the standard. And unless you could reach that standard, or close to that standard, this is your Bible. And you're going to make a record. Listen to this. Mm-hmm. Listen to this. Have it in your soul and ride that energy when you go in the studio. Ride that energy.
Did you ever talk to any of the guys in D.C.? AC/DC?
No.
They don't do a lot of interviews either.
You know what? I think there was an opportunity in 1980 to talk to Brian Johnson. And God bless the PD at the time. He felt that... the morning team should have done the interview. And it was his call, meaning that this is AC/DC. And this was before Brian Johnson and the success of Back in Black. So AC/DC hires a new singer. They want to introduce the singer to the marketplace. Do we know if AC/DC is going to have the wings to fly?
Right.
Who knows?
Right.
They had Robert John Mutt Lang. They were going to the... So anyway, the PD at the time, and it was a good call because I didn't know that they were... And we didn't know... I think I could be wrong, but he might have heard two or three songs. The program director, and he said, I want our morning man to speak to Brian Johnson. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah.
And then it took a while for Back in Black to take off, and then it's in our lexicon.
Yeah. It's the most classic of all time. Last few questions, Howard, as we start winding down. Who are some bands, I mean, Streetheart is definitely one of them, but that you think should have been bigger that just didn't get that luck?
You're talking Canadian?
Canadian or even American. Bands that you saw over the years and went, wow, like I don't know why they're not bigger.
That's from the top of my head. I'm trying to think. I always loved, and they had a cachet in America, but I had such a place in my heart for Saga. Mm. There was a time that Saga was my yes.
Mm.
Their songs were melodic. Their songs were adventurous. The songs came under that, if prog was the... they On the Loose... I just thought they just spoke to me, just like absolutely big time. I don't want to show my hometown bias, but I will. Chris Bergaffney wrote a song called Miracle. His son was born. He was so inspired. He wrote the song Miracle. That should have been a worldwide hit. What kind of love is this? You're a Canadian boy. It's a Streetheart song, the kind that makes me stand in line. That's a Tim Hortons commercial. That's a couple of Tim Hortons having a coffee. Here's their coffee. What kind of love? And then they embrace the kind that makes you stand in line. That's a moment. I'm not a writer at an ad agency, but that truly, truly is a moment. If I was to show you the best of Trooper, you'd see hit after hit after hit. There's like 12 bona fide hits. They should have had a cachet. Raise a Little Hell should have been an anthem at every arena in America.
Yeah, every sporting event.
So they have a Queen song. I get that. You want another try? Raise a Little Hell for the home team. Let's.
Yeah.
They like should have definitely should have had a stronger cachet. I didn't get it. There were so many. I was ecstatic, and I don't know if you were around then. You were in your travels, but Crash Test Dummies. Mm-hmm. Crash Test Dummies were the flag pretty good for a few years for Winnipeg.
Brad Roberts used to give me guitar lessons.
Really?
At Kent's Music on Portage Avenue.
That's fantastic.
And I remember, so Brad Roberts is the guitar player and the leader of Crash Test Dummies. And we used to have this book, the guitar book, and you'd have to play like Irish Washerwoman and like Three Blind Mice. And the one time I came in, he's like, you know what? This book sucks. He goes, what do you want to learn? I was like, Black Sabbath, Def Leppard. So he showed me how to play Paranoid, Rock of Ages, and Start Me Up.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, he said, next week, here's the lesson. You got to learn Start Me Up. And what about Irish Washerwoman, Brad? The Irish Washroom.
I love it.
I don't ever want to hear that song again.
I love it. Fantastic.
But yeah, they were really, really big. Biggest Winnipeg bands. Guess who? Crash Test Dummies for a short time. Neil Young.
Yeah. Oh, Neil Young.
Those are basically your three, right?
Neil Young, beyond superlatives. I'm incredulous why their forefathers haven't named some place in Winnipeg for Neil Young.
That's right. It goes back to some. There's a little bit of a weird stigma that Winnipeg has with their favorite songs.
I don't get it.
You know what I mean? You drive through like Moosomin's and a big billboard, home of Dave Tippett.
Yeah.
Played for the Hartford Whalers in like 1982. Here, there's like Neil Young. The guest, like Neil Young.
I don't get it.
You know, and it's actually because I'm not saying in a bad way. It's just one of those things that a couple of years ago. I got the Order of the Buffalo Hunt.
Fantastic.
Which is the highest honor you can get in Manitoba.
Kudos.
But it's great. I told, we were in Winnipeg for the WWE, and I told my boss, Vince McMahon, that I got the Order of the Buffalo Hunt. I said, you want to like say something about it today? He's like, Order of the Buffalo Hunt? That sounds really stupid. He goes, I'm not going to say you won the order, but in Winnipeg, it's a big deal. He goes, okay. But he was like, it does sound kind of funny. Like the Order of the Buffalo Hunt. Sounds like the Grand Poobah or something like that.
But it's still recognition.
Yeah, it was. It was nice to get it.
At the end of the day, you're recognized for accomplishments.
Yeah, yeah.
And Neil Young has to be. Every artist has learned a Neil Young song. Every artist. Think about that.
It's like his house should be like here's Neil Young's house, where, like Elvis's house.
You know where Bob Dylan did when he came to town 5 years ago?
What?
He went to Neil Young's place.
Oh, that's where he grew up?
He went to Neil Young to soak it in. Mm-hmm. To soak it in. He gets it.
Mm.
There's stories there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know what? Neil Young's not going to be on the planet forever. We need to do something while he's...
Agreed.
And when he comes to town, he has a driver. You know what the driver does? Neil says, take me here, take me there. He wants to soak up some memories. God bless him.
I mean, that's the thing. Even when I come back to town, I always go past my house where I grew up. I go hang out at DJ's restaurant.
Excellent.
I still enjoy coming back to Winnipeg because it's a great city, like a great city to grow up in. For the arts, for music,
arts,
for wrestling, for you know, fringe, acting, everything. It's a great city.
You're a wonderful ambassador. And I think we could call you the custodian of Winnipeg, too. You can wear a few hats. Let me say this, too. I'm really proud of you. And something else that I'm proud of you, the smile and the enthusiasm. God bless you for that.
Thanks, Howard. Last question. What's your favorite gig you've ever seen? Is one standout? It's hard to pick just one.
Because we were talking about it, but it'll change tomorrow.
Yeah.
My first answer should be The Who, because they're my favorite band. Mm-hmm. But the Aerosmith-ACDC combo at the Winnipeg Arena in 1979. I've been fortunate to see some incredible, incredible Who shows in Winnipeg. Over the years, but that show, and having said that, I know we're trying to say one show. I've been invited to some private parties where Burton Cummings would be at the piano and he'd be playing the hits and telling stories. Those to me were magical nights. I was in Bannerman Avenue in the North End, and then he'd play. We're both privileged, and to be invited into that inner circle and to be have that opportunity and hear those stories, how this came about. Mm-hmm. But that 1979 Bon Scott and a Steven Tyler that was hungry, that had drive, and man, it gets locked in your memory. But I can never ignore some of the Who shows that I have seen, because. Yeah, it's the Who.
Howard, you're a legendary guy, man. I appreciate you doing this today.
Chris, God bless you. Thank you. Chris, I loved it. I loved it.
All right, thanks to Rockologist and one of my childhood heroes, one of my childhood influences, Howard Manshine, for sharing all the great rock and roll stories from his incredible 40-year career on the air in Winnipeg. And if you're in Winnipeg, next time you're there, check out Howard on 92 City FM. That's the rock station in Winnipeg. I remember, 92 City FM, Howard Manshine, Rockologist. You can also stream the station on your phone or tablet. Listen to him if you ever want a little bit of rock and roll history. 92 City FM, Howard Manshine, what a rocker. What a rockologist. And go ahead and stream the new Fozzy single, Painless, on Spotify. We're already getting some early ads on radio. This might be just as big as Judas, if not bigger. We forgot to add it a few weeks ago. We're not going to forget now. Check it out. This is Painless from Judas right here by Fozzy. Song is shot and in the can. We're about ready to release it in a week or two. Coming soon, so is Fozzy. I already told you about our upcoming European tour with Steel Panther, the Judas Rising Tour in 2018, starting February 28th in Paris. We're heading to Switzerland, Luxembourg, Belgium, Germany, Spain, all over the place. Go check out all those dates at FozzyRock.com. And don't forget, Fozzy's also going to be rocking the Chris Jericho Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea, setting sail October 27th, 2018. For as low as $150, you can reserve your cabin at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And don't forget, everything is included in that price, all inclusive. All the food, all the activities, live podcasts, stand-up comedy, rock and roll shows, meet and greets, signings, pictures. You want to take a picture of Mick Foley? You know how much it's going to cost you when you're on the cruise? Nothing, because you already got your cabin. So that's how it works, all inclusive. And of course, you're going to get to see the Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament, all included in the price of your cabin. All you got to pay for is alcohol and gambling. If you don't do neither, everything's going to be free. And if you book your cabin by January 15th, you got about 3 weeks left, you're going to get a picture of me with the list. I will put you on the list, okay? Until January 15th, don't be late. If you're thinking about booking, don't book it on the 16th. You got to book on the 15th or earlier, and you will get on the list. Everyone always asks me, how do I make the list? That's how. Book your cabin at ChrisJerichoCruise.com before January 15th, and you too can make the list. All right, and you're going to be able to hang with all these Hall of Famers and great people: Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Cyrus and Paul Lazenby from Killing the Town, the Keeping It 100 crew, Conan, Disco Inferno, Shane Helms, Dave and Tim from Beyond the Darkness, going to be scaring the crap out of you, Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Jim Brewer doing comedy, live comedy. Jim's playing with his rock and roll band, The Loud and Rowdy. They're good, too. Dave LaGreca from Busted Open Radio. Fozzy, Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons. King, The Dives with Evan Stanley. The Dave Spivak Project. Check out his new video on YouTube now. It's called Get Out of My House. Very, very cool. Over 500 views for Spiwi in just a couple days. The Darlings of Rock and Roll, the Cherry Bombs, are going to be there to give you some great rock and roll dance routines. They're awesome, awesome girls. Shoot to Thrill, speaking of awesome girls, the world's best female AC/DC cover band. Blizzard of Oz, the world's best Aussie cover band. And don't forget, you're going to get the Eddie Guerrero podcast on Talk is Jericho. Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler on Talk is Jericho. We're doing a live debate, Killing the Town versus Keeping It 100. Well, that's what's going to happen on that. I'm going to interview the whole Bullet Club for Talk is Jericho. I got some big plans. Don't miss it. And, of course, don't miss the Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean. The ring is secured on deck. And the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. The Young Bucks are going to be there. The villain, Marty Scurll. The American Nightmare, Cody. Cody's wife, Brandi Rhodes. The Briscoe brothers, Dalton Castle. More names to be added soon. Don't you dare miss it, ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And don't you dare miss Alpha versus Omega, January 4th at the Tokyo Dome. Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega. Double main event along with Okada and Naito. Kenny and Chris, no DQ. It's the way it had to be. It's going to be a match like you've never seen in New Japan before. You can watch it live. Go to New Japan World. Subscribe now. Check it out. Go do that. And we're going to be rocking it. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much to the Killer Talk is Jericho sponsors and to all of you for supporting them. DDPYoga.com. Go to DDPYoga.com/Jericho. Take advantage of DDP's big holiday sale. Get 30% off the DDPY DVDs, the app, related merch, everything in between. And go to TrueCar. Save time, save money, save peace of mind at TrueCar. Go do it now. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and coming up on Friday. We're going back into the paranormal conspiracy world. It's Histories Mysteries with my bros in Gemini Syndrome. We toured together earlier this year, and these guys, wow, do they ever have some stories and some conspiracy theories and everything in between. Talking about Histories Mysteries with Gemini Syndrome coming up on Friday. We'll see you then. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy! This is Rockologist Chris Jericho signing out. Thanks, Howard.